Well, we have a new year, January 1st. About that. I'm going to work on grammar this year. New year, new you. You heard the expression, right? How many of you have a, let's just use it and get it out of the way, a resolution plan this year, a New Year's resolution? How many Googled, let's start there, how many Googled New Year's resolutions? I know I'm not the only one. Come on. Okay, no one's going to admit it. That's okay. How many of you have a New Year's, New You resolution? Just throw it out. Don. Better man, better husband, and more of a walk with God. Wow. That is ambitious. I like it. Like it. I'm sure God does too. Yes, Lena. To not fall victim to buying things you don't need. Well, you know, Christmas shopping will likely start in July this coming year, so you've got 6 months to rest it. No, that's good. That's really good. That's a deep reality for many of us. Others, resolutions. Yes. Being kinder to his brother and expressing love to him every day. All right. That's very cool. Very cool. See a hand way in the back, Spence. To be a student of grace as you read your Bible more. Very nice. You'll find quite a picture of a gracious God there and one to follow. He says, be imitators of me. Be imitators of God as dearly beloved children. It's a good place to go. Oh, live day by day, not get ahead of God. That's good. I, of course, Googled it. That's why I asked earlier. And, of course, fitness, some form of physical fitness was at the top of most of the lists of New Year's resolutions. You kind of expected that, whatever that looks like. And then financial makeovers in some form, either get out of debt or I want to live by a budget or, as someone's already said, I want to spend more responsibly, maybe more, you know, with restraint, that kind of thing. Another one was get organized. That's a good one. That's it. How many have their Christmas stuff down and put away already? All right. Yeah, we do. We do. Maybe you want to be more ambitious than anything I've mentioned. How about learning a language? I've always been curious about Chinese. So I checked this out with a Chinese friend this week, and it turns out it's apparently correct. It's easier than you thought, maybe some of you, but here's just a quick sampling of how fast you can pick up the language. The English expression, that's not right, that'd be a good thing to know in Chinese. Sum Ting Wong. Or, how many of you ride horseback, but when you're referring to a small horse, Tai Ni Po Ni. I checked this out with Don Lee this week, okay? You might want to know this at the airport. Okay, this is a tow-away zone, no pa king. Come on, it's right here. some people get a tan, they have that look. Did you go to the beach might be a fair question. Wa yu so tan. I like this one. You got to be careful, but sometimes you have to ask very personal questions. So if you think someone needs a facelift, chin tu fat. Okay, well, And then, of course, you probably guessed this one, but we always like to drive with clean cars when it stops raining outside. And this, he is cleaning his automobile. Wa xing ka. And then I like this, especially you parents that want to learn Chinese this coming year. When you want your child to come quickly, see me ASAP, is come here. And then somebody goofs up a meeting, and it's scheduled for next week. Wa yu kum na. Get the idea. All right, we've had a little fun. Let's go past resolutions for a minute, all right? So let's just, let's guess. In fact, I want to frame something for you. If God were to give you one wish, what would you wish for? I like questions like this. What would you wish for? It's so good. All my kids would walk with Jesus. Anybody? What would you wish for? Another? People would stop lying about God? Wow. False teaching. There's plenty of it today. You have to take everything back to the Word and verify it, you know. Acts 17, Bereans, that's what they did. That's what we need to be like. Yes? Okay, family reunited, come together. I didn't hear it, but let's just take a stab at the possibility that some might wish for, again, God's saying, hey, you call it, no limits. Maybe some would wish for money. Some might wish for health. Some might wish for marriage or a date. Or some might wish for children or an empty nest. Maybe you're not going to say this out loud. It would be weird and people would look at you like, that person has needs. But how about fame? God said, hey, no limits. It doesn't have to be sacred. There's no lines drawn. It's yours. I'll give it to you, says God. Would it be beauty? A new car. Anybody dream of a new car? You don't have to raise it real high. Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. All right. A new home. Again, no limits. In thinking about the coming year, I was captured recently by someone who was actually given such an offer. I'm not making this up. Did you know it's in the Bible? My Bible's open to 1 Kings chapter 3. I want you to turn there if you would. And I'll say on your way there something that will shock you if you're not real familiar with this story. It's a story about a teenager, of all people, that God comes to and says, you want it, you got it. It didn't put any parameters to his offer. God simply said to a teenager, who, by the way, found himself in very deep water. In every way, he was, let's call him a little fish in a very vast pond, an ocean. Of course, his name is Solomon. And this chapter that we're going to look at, and another one along with it, reveals the secret behind how Solomon became a two-time world record holder. Got you curious? This is the seeds of Solomon's greatness in 1 Kings chapter 3. Now, a couple of thoughts about who Solomon is, just to set the proper biographical perspective. Who is this one? We know Solomon. We read the Bible and read of Solomon. Who was he? Well, he was the son and heir apparent of the throne of his father, King David. Now digest that for a minute and you'll go, with Solomon. Serious? Me? In the shadow of greatness? Really? And in those days, the successor to the throne was the son of the king. Thus, Solomon. He was very young and inexperienced when his big break, if you want to call it that, came. Which explains why he was, in a very big way, intimidated by the size and the scope of the crown he was to wear. He was 18 years old. Our country requires you to be, I think it's 40 or older to be the president. How old? 35, we should raise it, I think. But anyway, he's 18, folks. He just got his driver's license. Right? Solomon's a youngster. And in a dream one night, early, he's still unpacking his very few boxes. He didn't have a whole bunch of stuff by that point in his life. And moving into the palace. He's that young in his reign. God appears to Solomon with a 9-word offer, which is recorded for us in verse 5. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream. And God said, here's the 9 words, ask for whatever you want me to give you. Notice the quotation marks. Before ask and after you. Ask whatever you want me to give you. 9 words. That's it. I'm 50-something. And I'm thinking, I would flip out. My kids would say you'd freak out at such a open-ended offer. Right? Imagine a young, less mature 18-year-old being handed that, as he is. Now let's look at the way he answers God's offer. Pick up with me at verse 7. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. But I'm only a little child. That's how he felt. Do you not, and do not know how to carry out my duties? Your servant is here, speaking of himself, among the people you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to count or number. So he's adding this up in his response. Verse 9. So give your servant, give me a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours? Wow. You cannot miss how God felt about Solomon's request as we read on. The Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, since you have asked for this and not, and he lists some other very reasonable possibilities that Solomon could have asked for. You have not asked for a long life, that's health, or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies. And there were many. But you've asked for discernment in administering justice. I will do, since you asked for that, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, the very thing you requested, so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. So you see why we usually, smart people, refer to Solomon as the standard of wisdom. And it's correct to do so. Still reading. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for. Huh? Both riches and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in my ways and obey my statutes and commands as David your dad did, I will give you a long life as well. And then Solomon woke and he realized it had been a dream. How did God feel about Solomon's request? I'll give you one word for it. He was pleased. You can't say pleased without a smile. If you're God, it was a look of, all right, you're my man. Good call, Solomon. Right? That's God. Because Solomon had no limits to what he could have asked for. And yet he says, God, I'm in over my head. Big job. I'm a little guy. I know I'm the king's son, but I don't show up with a lot. Maybe true confession time, he didn't pay close attention. I don't know. His dad did it so well. It's kind of like a child learning how to drive, which our youngest is just now behind the wheel. She spent all these years watching mom and dad, grown-ups, handle the car. We know what we're doing. We can do it well. I don't get in accidents, and I don't get in tickets often. But here's the deal. Maybe you know this if you have a teenage driver. You know that they are sometimes easily lost. They get lost. Why do they get lost? Because they have not paid attention. Dad knows how to get me to school. Dad, mom knows how to drive me to the doctor. They know how to get to Costco. So when you hand them the keys, honey, it's your turn. She's going, was that right or left when you said your turn? You know, I mean, they don't know. And so they start asking for GPSs to help them know. Because they didn't pay attention. Maybe that was Solomon. His dad was good. Whatever the case, he asked the right thing, didn't he? In Ephesians 5:10, we're told, find out what pleases the Lord. In Hebrews 11:6, we learn that without faith, it is impossible to please him. So Ephesians 5:10 is an appeal to you and me. Find out what pleases the Lord. And Hebrews 11:6 helps you with at least one answer of what pleases the Lord, faith. Find out what pleases the Lord. And by the way, without faith, you won't please him. Solomon showed great faith in passing on lesser, though very tempting, things like wealth and health, and frankly, the heads of his enemies. He could have listed all that. God, give me a hand. He didn't. His choice pleased the Lord. Not only did God grant him his request, making him, and I'll remind you of these words we read in verse 12, the wisest person to ever live. That's one of the world records he held and holds. The second, God made him what he hadn't requested, making him the wealthiest person in his day. No one exceeded his wealth. A short time later, there was a jaw-dropping moment for Israel. Some have suggested it was later that day. I don't know. We're not told. But if you go down to verse 16, you'll see why Israel's jaw dropped when it heard of the wisdom displayed by the king in handling a dicey domestic dispute. Look on with me. It's so worth the read. Verse 16. Now, two prostitutes came to the king, stood before him. One of them said, "My lord, this woman and I live in the same house. I had a baby while she was there with me. Third day after my child was born, this woman also had a baby." So two brand new moms. "We were alone. There was no one in the house but the two of us and, of course, their children. During the night, this woman's son died because she lay on him. It was the custom of that day to keep the baby, the child, warm, in this case a son, by keeping them close to the body of the mom. Evidently, in the night, the mom rolls over and perhaps suffocates her son, but he dies. Verse 20, "So she got up in the middle of the night and took my son from my side while I, your servant, was asleep. She put him by her breast and put her dead son by my breast." Do you see the switch? "The next morning I got up to nurse my son, and he was dead. But when I looked at him closely in the morning light, I could see clearly that this wasn't the son I had born." The other woman said, "No, the living one is my son. The dead one is yours." But the first one insisted, "No, the dead one is yours. The living one is mine." And they argued before the king, and you could see this thing just going nowhere. So this king, who perhaps earlier that day or days before had requested not wealth, not health, not the heads of his enemies, but for wisdom, this king displayed what God had given him. When God said, "I granted you wisdom," he meant it. The king says, "This one says, 'My son is alive and your son is dead,' while the other one says, 'No, your son is dead and my son is alive.'" And then the king said, "Bring me a sword." Had to be a attention getter. So they brought a sword to the king. Then he gave an order, "Cut the living child in two and give half to one and half to the other." The woman whose son was alive was filled with compassion for her boy and said to the king, "Please, my lord, give her the living baby. Don't kill him." The other one said, "Neither I nor you shall have him. Cut him in half." And the king gave his ruling. "Give the living baby to the first woman. Do not kill him. She is his mother." When all Israel heard the verdict the king had given, they held the king in awe. That's how it sounds. Did you hear what the king did? Because they saw that he had wisdom from God that made it possible to administer justice. As a result of Solomon's pleasing answer to God's offer, our Bible contains a legacy of God's words penned by Solomon. They are, of course, in the book of Proverbs, and maybe you knew this, but Ecclesiastes, 12 chapters, are authored by Solomon, as is the Song of Songs, or Song of Solomon. All of those, including a couple of Psalms, have the authorship of Solomon and are the fruit of what God meant when he delivered on his promise. So starting today, we're declaring 2012 as a church the year of walking in wisdom. And we have kind of a fun idea. Our thinking is simply this, that we as a church body, just like we did this last year, we finished the year reading the entire Bible through, little portion of the Old Testament, New Testament, Psalms, and Proverbs. In the coming year, we want to challenge everybody, regardless of your translation of Scripture, doesn't matter. We want to encourage you to read a chapter of the book of Proverbs every day. There are 31 chapters, perhaps you knew, which roughly boils down to reading the entire book of Proverbs through 12 times in a year. That sound good? You may know that Billy Graham was one time asked about his personal Bible study practices. I pay attention when people like that or my mom or dad or somebody that's sagely and wise is asked questions like that. And people took notes. You know what his answer was? I forget all the details of his answer, but the part that really stood out to a lot of people was, I read 5 Psalms a day and 1 book of Proverbs a day. He was asked, why? Why do you do that? Well, he said, you know, first of all, it's easy to keep track because there's 150 psalms, and 5 a day means you can get through the entire book of Psalms in a month, and the same is true in Proverbs. But he said more deeply, and the reason he does it this way is because Psalms teaches you how to relate to God in a myriad of complex, challenging circumstances that life presents you and me. And Proverbs, it does more than this, but Proverbs helps you relate to people. It gives you the wisdom to walk well in this world. Isn't that a great answer? So ever since hearing that, I thought, man, that's a good approach. So we thought as a staff, as a ministry team, that we really wanted our church to, you know, if I can say it this way, get gray with some wisdom. All right? So let's do that this year. Want to do that? We won't pester you with it, but we'll remind you from time to time in the coming year. Hey, and it's easy. January 12th, what chapter? You're catching on, okay? So it's really simple, and it should be a lot of fun. Now, since today is the first, and to keep you from thinking wisdom is only for Old Testament saints or for seasoned people in our world, or people that have God dreams at night like this, I want you to take, just in the balance of a few minutes with me and look at Proverbs chapter 1. So everybody go from where it all started here, 1 Kings 3, to Proverbs chapter 1. And let's discover just kind of some insights how to walk in wisdom. Since we only have one service today, let's double the time, wanna? No. Let me just give you a couple of thoughts that stand out to me. Here's a sample of how wisdom works. And you teenagers, pay particular attention right now. And kids, listen. Look down at verse 8. It's kind of cool stuff. It's how it begins. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. My son, and this will happen if it hasn't already, if sinners entice you, don't give in to them. If they say, come along with us, let's lie in wait for someone's blood, let's waylay some harmless soul. That means to pounce on and do harm to a harmless soul. Let's swallow them alive like the grave and whole like those who go down to the pit. You can almost hear this sort of cynical sound to the enticement. You know, almost a pirate sound. Come with us. We will get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot with us and we will share a common purse. There's plenty to go around, the enticement. Verse 15, my son, don't go along with them, says the wise counsel. Don't set your foot on their path. Why? For their feet rush into sin and they are swift to shed blood. How useless to spread a net in full view of all the birds. But these men lie in wait for their own blood. They waylay only themselves. Such is the end of all who go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away the lives of those who get it. They think, wow, we're scoring big. They find it just costs themselves and their own lives. Now, God is willing to provide wisdom. This is something that you need to make note of. Because if you and I are sitting here today in 2012 wondering, how do I get wisdom? You need to know something about God. He is very interested, very willing in providing people wisdom. Look at verse 20. Wisdom calls aloud in the street. She raises her voice in the public squares. At the head of the noisy street, she cries out. In the gateways of the city, she makes her speech. This is not subtle, it's not shy. How long will you simple ones love your simple ways? How long will mockers delight in mockery and fools hate knowledge? If you had responded to my rebuke, I would have poured out my heart to you and made my thoughts known to you. What you and I are reading here with words like, you know, calls aloud, verse 20, raises her voice in public, verse 20. What we're reading about when we read that wisdom is makes a speech, nothing at all subtle about wisdom. It's very clear. Nothing here is reserved for just a few. It's an announcement to all. You want wisdom? Hey, can you hear me in the back? Can you hear me on the far corners? Listen to me, wisdom says. And I will deliver to you. It's open to all, which I think raises a really good question. Are you willing to pursue wisdom? If it's true that it's open to all, it's calling aloud in the streets and raising her voice in the public squares, it's yours for the taking. Do you want it? Do you want it bad? Are you interested in a couple of scoops? Many are unwilling, apparently, according to verse 24 and 5, unwilling to pursue God's wisdom. It's available. Can I use this expression? It's on the bottom shelf. You don't even have to reach. Look at verse 24. But since you rejected me when I called, that's shocking. It should shock us. What? Really? You rejected me when I called, and no one gave heed when I stretched out my hand. Since you ignored all of my advice and would not accept my rebuke. Many people evidently are unwilling to pursue God's wisdom. And I think it raises a great question for us to chew on. Why? Some answers are given in verses 24 and 5. The first is stubbornness. Look at verse 24. It's the word rejected. You know what that means? Don't tell me what to do. See there? Since you rejected me, you were stubborn. You stiffened your neck and said, don't tell me what to do. Do not correct me. That's one of the reasons that people take a pass rather than pursue wisdom. They're stubborn. Here's another one. They're insensitive. Also in verse 24, look at this. No one gave heed when I stretched out my hand. Similar to Jesus' indictment in Matthew 13, when he said, people have become dull of hearing. They doze off. They get sleepy. They don't listen well. They nap when they should notice. Insensitivity. A third is in verse 25. Third reason why people pass on wisdom. Since you, look at the word ignored. Ignored all of my advice. It's the idea of indifference. It's people you see, you hear, but you shrug your shoulders. It's you're indifferent. You ignored all of my advice. We would say, couldn't care less. Wisdom is provided. No thanks. No big deal. I seem to be managing okay. And then there's a fourth reason, also in verse 25. You would not accept my rebuke. That's a defensiveness. An unwilling and unyielding attitude toward rebuke. I remember when I was a kid, my parents would correct us. And there were times when, let's say we lied or we stole something or whatever it was that my brother or sister did. I remember my parents correcting us for the behavior, whatever it happened to be. But we got more than the correction for the behavior when we were covering it up, when we became people who would not accept, we would cover it up. And then my dad would say, you know, that's two swats or three swats or sometimes many more, depending on how badly they needed it. And we would go to our room and he would give us a spanking, you know, a couple of spankings. And we would, to use verse 25, if we stiffened ourselves up and got stubborn, and I asked him later, I've asked him in more recent years, how did you know when to, you know, when the discipline had achieved its purpose? And there was a noticeable difference in the sort of countenance of the child. In this case, me. It had gone from, man, if I was bigger, I'd give it right back to you, you know. That was where it started. And then it became a yielded, okay, I've submitted to and accepted, use verse 25, rebuke. And it changed me. Now, refusing to pursue God's wisdom comes with painful, and I have to say it because the Bible presents it, predictable consequences. Look at verse 26. Let's just finish the chapter. You are offered wisdom. It's been provided, but you have not accepted it. You've resisted it for those various reasons, stubborn, indifferent, and so on. Verse 24 and 25. If that's your story, 26 is for you. I, in turn, will laugh at your disaster. I will mock when calamity overtakes you. When calamity overtakes you like a storm, when disaster sweeps over you like a whirlwind, when distress and trouble overwhelm you, then they will call on me, these who say, I don't need wisdom. They will call on me, but I will not answer. They will look for me, but they will not find me. Since they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, since they would not accept my advice and spurned my rebuke, they stiffened up and said, no way, no how are you going to change me? Verse 31, they will eat of the fruit of their own ways. I love New American Standard. I memorized this years ago. They will be satiated with their own devices. They will eat the fruit of their own ways and be filled with the fruit of their schemes. For the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. Did you notice the word when? As I read verses 26 and following, four times. That's why I say, refusing God's wisdom, pushing back and saying, no, thank you. It comes with some very, very painful and predictable consequences. That's why he uses the word when. I will mock when calamity overtakes you, when disaster sweeps over you, when distress and trouble overwhelm you. But receiving God's wisdom is a pathway to wonderful outcomes. Verse 33, I love that this chapter ends with that. But whoever listens to me will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm. I'm a word guy, you know that. But I love the words there. I mean, I just lift out of there words like safety. I like the sound of that. Ease, I'll take it. Fearless, I like that too. Speaking of fear, clearly Solomon possessed a proper fear of the Lord, not his enemies. And as I mentioned earlier, he had them. But he didn't ask for the death of his enemies, because I'm convinced they weren't on his radar. It doesn't worry me. Got more important things to focus on. I'll fear the Lord. That's where I'll start. By the way, if you'll, without closing chapter 1 yet, back up to verse 7. That's where it all begins. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The fools despise wisdom and discipline. Which makes sense that if you were to read, and you will hopefully take my suggestion and read this year, Proverbs again and again, you will find that some 11 times in 31 chapters, 11 times, fear the Lord is mentioned. Fear the Lord. Fear the Lord. That's where our focus needs to be. And it's, by the way, how he concluded Ecclesiastes. He searched for meaning in all sorts of pursuits in life. And then at the end of chapter 12 in Ecclesiastes, he says, my paraphrase, the conclusion of all that I've examined is this: fear God and follow his commandments. For in doing those things, there is fulfillment and life. Let's do that together, Bonna, this year. I'd like you to bow your heads with me as we conclude our first Sunday together in the new year. God, as we begin 2012, we begin it in prayer. And God, we begin it with a bias to being wise. If I've just prayed a word, a sentence that describes you, you're saying, Pastor, that's me. I have a bias, as you put it, to being wise. I want to be wise this year. I'd like to ask you to stand to your feet right now. Would you do that? You're saying, Pastor, that describes me. I want to be wise this coming year, and I plan to walk this wise road, and we will together as a church. Still praying, God, we know it won't happen quickly, and it won't come easily. Good things never happen that way. But it will happen. It will happen as we view you properly with awe. And determine, God, in our own way, every one of us is different, but determine to overcome the spiritual lethargy and the complacency whenever we encounter it in our own lives. We stand in awe of you today. But God, we ask as we sing this final song and gather up prayer requests and plan to be a praying people this year, we ask that as this song captures, you would awaken our souls. And let me encourage you as we sing this last song, make this your prayer for 2012. God, awaken my soul. Put in me a hunger and a thirst for you, for wisdom, and for walking according to your word. Let's sing this last song and give to God our hearts.